I'm supposed to wait for the blue light. The blue light's on. Call the first meeting of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, committee members. We don't have a lot of people in the audience, but welcome all of you who are here. And I will tell our newest member of the committee that even though there aren't a lot of people here, there are a lot of people in the building riveted to their television screens watching the activities of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. This is going to be quite a session for Senate Finance and Revenue, and I thought what we would do today, we have a very small agenda today. We will be adopting committee rules, and we'll be talking about our work plan. But I thought what we would do is start off just by introducing ourselves to each other and to the audience and to the people who are riveted to their TVs. So I will start out with our newest member, our true freshman, Senator Telfer.
It's been a long time since I've been a freshman. Chris Telfer, representing District 27, Central Oregon.
And why don't you say a little about your background, because I think it's very relevant to the committee.
Well, I am a certified public accountant, and so I know a little bit about numbers. It's always fun to deal with the top part of the P&L versus the bottom part, so I'm looking forward to this, actually, and hoping I can maybe bring some skills and expertise and some education that might have some bearing on some of our discussions.
Thank you. Senator Hatz.
Mark Hass from area Beaverton in southwest Portland. I've been in the House three terms and was appointed to fill your predecessor's seat a year or so ago and recently elected. And I don't think I've been down here when I haven't been on a revenue committee. And still, Paul Warner wants to know, when is he going to learn those things?
Okay, Senator Morse.
Frank Morse from the, well, I live in Albany. I represent the Albany Corrales areas and came into the legislature in 03, which is deja vu all over again for 09.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Senator Dianne Rosenbaum and come here also as a freshman in the same freshman class with Senator Telfer. Spent the last decade in the House of Representatives. I began my career in the House on the Revenue Committee and then was not on it for a while and then was back on it last session with Phil Barnhart. I have a passion for tax reform. I once joked that after having solved workers' compensation, I decided there were no challenges really left, and so tax reform would become my lifetime preoccupation, and here I am.
Thank you. And I'm Ginny Burdick. I have been chair of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee for a relatively short time, about a year and a half. When I first got elected in 1996, my first choice of committees was revenue, and as this process often does, it throws you in different directions, and I ended up being chair of the Judiciary Committee and a longtime member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and then about a year and a half ago, my president, Peter Courtney, asked me to switch and come to chair the Revenue Committee. I'm very honored to be doing that. And I will have to say that when Senator Courtney called me up to tell me who my committee members were, number one, that he was still keeping me, which I suppose is a good sign, as chair, and who my committees were, my comments to him were, and this is, you know, relatively recently, I said, you know, this is going to be a very tough and painful session. Especially for Senate Finance and Revenue, but I want to thank you for giving me the strongest team I could imagine to get through these rough times. All of us have some experience on revenue, and you certainly have on-the-ground experience, Senator Telfer, on the issues that we'll be dealing with. The session is going to be very, very difficult, and we're going to probably not be popular people a lot of the time, but I think we have to think of creative ways as a committee when we see the bills and we see the proposals. I think we have to think of creative ways to respond to the crisis that we have while being very sensitive to our other constituencies besides our district constituents, which is all of the taxpayers of Oregon. And I think one of the things that I want to really focus on as chair, when we get proposals before this committee, that our number one priority should always be to make sure that the taxpayers are getting their money's worth for the policy proposals that we advance, whether we're talking about tax credits or revenue enhancements or whatever we're talking about, that be foremost on our minds. And, I naturally forgot to have the most important person who's been called, what did Senator Courtney call you, Paul? He called you an icon. I think he called him an icon. our staff person, Dr. Paul Warner, who does not insist on being called Dr. Warner. But, Paul, why don't you say a little about your background before we get going here?
Oh, well, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I have coming up on February 1st will be my 10th anniversary of being at Legislative Revenue. So that's kind of a milestone for me. It seems a lot longer, but it's been 10 years. So before that, I was a state economist for almost 10 years. And then prior to that, I did some revenue forecasting for the state of Mississippi, which was interesting. And then I started off as an assistant professor and teaching public finance and macroeconomics for about 5 years. So I'm always happy to be here, and this is a job that's very always interesting, never dull, and certainly one that you develop a passion for because of the folks you get to work with and the issues.
Okay, and do you all have a microphone over there? Okay, we've got Anna Grimes. Put your hand up, Anna. She's our main person. And Corinne is sitting next to her. And Carol. Yeah, and you'll find out very quickly. I'm bad on names. You'll come up to the committee, you'll introduce yourself, and I'll call you by the wrong name. So My apologies in advance. Okay, with that introduction, we will start off today by adopting our committee rules. If you've had a chance, they're in your packet here. These are pretty standard rules. Paul, is there anything in particular that we should focus on these rules?
Just a couple of things, Madam Chair. I think they're familiar with them. They're standard Senate to model committee rules. One thing just to keep in mind about kind of procedurally is we do have a small committee with a five-person committee, so we'll need to be aware of quorum. Three people is a quorum, so that sometimes can easily slip for a relatively small committee. The other thing I would point out is in terms of on rule number six on fiscal and revenue impact statements, leadership has gone to an effort in both chambers to make sure that when this really pertains mostly to policy committees, but it is often on revenue bills, when a committee makes a decision with a subsequent referral to revenue or to ways and means, but you know, oftentimes you'll have bills come to revenue on a subsequent, that in the past we had given what's called a hall pass, which means we say, yeah, it has a revenue impact, but we'll get to it when it gets to revenue committee. And we could only do that if it had a subsequent. Now, the intent this session is to give a revenue impact statement, to issue that for the policy committee, and not have them approve that policy, even if it is coming to another committee, until they've seen those numbers. Okay. So you'll have a completed revenue impact on those subsequences they come across. One thing, too, I might add about those revenue impact statements is for the first time, we've added a section on there that will have a box on there whether it has an increase, increases an existing tax expenditure, creates a new one, or extends a sunset on one. And if we put yes on that, we will put an interpretive statement on the public policy purpose of that, and what the expected outcomes is of that tax expenditure. So that's something that will be new, a more formalized process than what we've done in the past. So you'll see those kind of statements, and so the policy committee should give us input on what that should look like, and you'll see that when those committees come over. Or if they're just straight revenue bills, you'll have to decide, you know, what you want that statement to look like to ensure that the intent of the committee is known if it becomes law.
Yeah, and these two changes are really crucial because I think over the years the legislature has just approved a lot of tax expenditures, whether they be deductions or tax credits, and they've tended to accumulate. In fact, I hope all of the committee members will get a chance to at least look through the recently released report on tax expenditures, because a tax expenditure, whether it be deduction or a tax credit, there's really no difference in terms of our budget between that and sitting down and writing a check for somebody. And, of course, the Ways and Means Committee is in the check-writing business, and we all see that impact on the budget. If you spend $100,000 over here, then you don't have it over here. Well, it's the same thing with tax credits and tax expenditures. So I think it was certainly one of the objectives of my predecessor, Senator Deckert, and it's going to be one of mine, is to put as much accountability and transparency into that process, and especially now with a very difficult revenue situation, I think we need to take a very hard look at everything we're doing in this area, because it's the same as spending money on it. So thank you. Senator Morse, would you like to make a motion on this?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that we adopt the rules as presented, titled Senate Model Committee Rules 2009 Session.
Thank you. Is there any discussion by the committee? Any objections? So ordered. Okay, rules are adopted, and now we will move into discussion of the... Mm-hmm. Did you want to do this thing first?
Yeah,
okay.
I can go.
You'll find at your setting our most famous or infamous document. It's Oregon Public Finance Basic Facts. This is the 2009 version. And it's we were feverishly copying it last night, so this is hot off the press. And what we try to do is produce this every 2 years at least. Sometimes we have time annually. But it's really a compendium, a summation of revenue information. So I hope you'll find it useful, and we'll be referring to it some, particularly in the first couple of weeks. But I wanted to refer you to the page 3, which is our organizational chart for legislative revenue. The first thing to point out is, for those of you who haven't visited us for a while, we are now in a different location, room 143, which is over on the Secretary of State's wing there, where the old Elections Division used to be. So we're in room 143. Of course, the way we're structured is a legislative revenue officer is a statutory position. The appointing officers for my position is the House and Senate Revenue Committee chairs, and, of course, the Speaker and the Senate President. So that's kind of how the structure works. One of the things we've done that's a little different than we have in the past, we've created a distinction between our economist positions. We used to just have four economist positions, but we found that we do have issues that tend to require more experience and a little bit more knowledge of processes and so forth. And we have some people that have been working in state on these issues for a long time, and some at legislative revenue. And so we've distinguished between our senior economists and our other economist positions, and we think this will give us a little bit better structure in terms of our office. But one of our senior economists is here, Mazen Malik, is in the back, and Mazen handles the transportation issues and, as he says, nearly all the sins, gambling and drinking and smoking. And
he's so, our economist of vice.
Yeah, that's right. So if you think of any of those things, just think of Mazen. So he's also done a lot of work on financing and bond financing, too. So Mazen, one of our senior economists. The other is Steve Meyer, and Steve has been with us since... since the Big Bang, which was 1975, is when we were created. Steve was here at that time. and was hired by Rich Munn in 1975. So he's been with us all that time, and he's very knowledgeable in school finance and the state school fund distribution formula. Our other economist, Chris Alanak, works on personal and corporate income taxes. He also works on our OTIM model, which we may come to use, our task force used extensively in the interim. And we have Dave Beck has come over from Office of Economic Analysis, where Dave was heavily involved in the revenue and economic forecast process. Dave will be working on property taxes, cigarette tax estimates, unemployment taxes, and a big issue we anticipate, health care taxes, provider taxes, and a number of potential revenue proposals in that area. Our office manager is Corinne Gavette. Corinne is a good contact for just general committee information. June Starkey is our information technology person we share with LFO. And our Carol Phillips is here, our House Committee Assistant. And Anna Grimes is your committee assistant, so Anna's your contact person for any committee business you need help with. Anna worked with us on the Revenue Restructuring Task Force this past interim, so she's gone through the trial by fire. And Sam Moody is our docket clerk, and she's our receptionist, so Sam is often the first person you see if you come in the office or call the office. So that's our staff. We're small but wiry. And we're here to help you in any way we can.
And I want to emphasize that last point, because don't hesitate to, when you get an idea or you have a constituent who has an idea that they want you to pursue, to be sure to check with Paul or one of the staff, because oftentimes that can shorten the process extraordinarily, because this is very, as we all know, very complex stuff. And the staff, that we've got just an incredible staff here, and we need to use them. Mm-hmm. So,
well, one other thing I would add, too, Madam Chair, is we work very closely with the Department of Revenue. They provide us with most of the data we use, and they also provide us with a lot of staff assistance. And the two folks that you'll be working most closely with from the department are Deborah Buchanan and John Phillips, who will be here virtually every meeting. At least one of them will be here. Deborah does all the income tax stuff, and John is the property tax expert. So they help us with getting information, help us contact, in John's case, with the assessors. And so they're very invaluable to us, and almost kind of really an extension of your committee staff.
Also pretty well seasoned, several sessions, certainly since I've been involved. Okay.
And Madam Chair, I think I understand this, but for those of us that are a little bit Luddite, the blue light over there is now the indication that the microphone is on, is that correct?
That's correct, and if anybody sees that blue light flashing, then we need to get the attention of the, if they haven't already noticed it, of Anna.
If it's flashing, it means we're either in pause, like if you guys want to take a recess for a little while, or if it's blinking, we have a problem. So we're working that out. This is our new system this year.
And we can't afford to have any of our words not recorded. Okay, Paul, is there anything else you want to say about this? Basic facts?
Madam Chair, we find that it is very effective if you have insomnia. So.
Okay, that and the tax expenditure report should absolutely cure any cases of insomnia that may exist on this committee. Okay, let's move on to the work plan. Paul? Oh, first of all, does anybody on the committee have any questions? Okay, go ahead, Paul.
You have a draft work plan, and this is been worked out in discussions with the House and Senate Revenue Chairs. It's a draft work plan, so this is really the first time you've seen this. So what we've done is try to list the summary of the key issues and the rough timeline. A couple of things I'll mention on the issues are that sometimes we find that particularly in the fluid situation we're in now, that issues can change in relative importance or can emerge. So certainly this is not intended to be an exhaustive list of the revenue issues you may face in this committee. We are concerned, very concerned, as you might suspect, about the economic environment. These are the kinds of We're seeing some changes we have not seen really in the post-war period. It's a very unusual time. Our economy appears to be going through a major adjustment from a period of over-indebtedness, over-consumption, and that's having a huge effect on our financial system, on our economy, and on the world economy. So that's all going to be a factor that will have a big influence on the state budget picture, the state revenue picture. We do have some updated information for you, and I wanted to make sure that you're aware that the House Revenue Committee it has invited you to attend their hearing tomorrow at 8 in this room. During the last revenue forecast, State Economist Tom Petowski said he would be giving the committees an update between forecasts. And so Tom will be there to talk about what they're seeing in terms of the revenue trends over the last couple of months since the last forecast came out. He's just starting the formal forecast process where they get their final national assumptions. He meets with his council, Governor's Council of Economic Advisors, and they start their process. But this will be an opportunity to get a sense of where they think they are at this point, and since the revenue situation is likely to be a shape a lot of things that happen in this building over the next 6 months. So Tom will be here tomorrow at 8, and Chair Barnhart has wanted to make sure that you're invited.
And yeah, and committee, I would really recommend that everyone be here. I know that's a very early hour, especially on a Friday, but this is going to be kind of a mid-course, at least, guess at what the forecast is likely to bring, the next forecast, and I think it would be good for all of us to be there. We will have a couple of times this session where we try to meet jointly with the House at their meeting time, which is 8 o'clock, and so I'll be talking to all of you committee members individually during the next week, so we'll try to get a sense of what people's schedules are that we can work around. But for tomorrow, if you can possibly make it, I would recommend it. It'll only be about 40 minutes that we will have the economist, the state economist with us. So it's just that long a commitment. Okay, go ahead, Paul.
Okay, so the looking at the list of issues, and one thing I might add, too, is the chairs have talked about kind of a logical starting place for some of these issues. So some things you may see are critical issues probably appear on the House work plan initially, and I've listed them kind of a brief line for those House bills. But what I'll do also, Madam Chair, for the committee is make the House work plan available to you, too. So that'll give you an idea of what you may be seeing coming over from the House. The first issue is one that the Interim Task Force on Comprehensive Revenue Restructuring spent a good deal of time working on, and that is on reserve funds. You will be hearing a report on next Thursday during the committee meeting time from Lane Shetterly, the chair of the task force, and Tim Nesbitt from the governor's office will be here next Thursday. And we are going to distribute copies of the task force report to all the members tomorrow morning. Anna has those copied, and we'll have them in your boxes, so you'll get that final report then. And Lane will be here to summarize and answer questions for you on Thursday. And, of course, we've had two of our committee members who are members of that task force. So the reserve fund issue was one. As you recall, the rainy day fund was established in 2007, the statutory fund. This committee spent a lot of time working on that issue. House Bill 2707 emerged from that. It did have an initial capitalization of $319 million from a one-time suspension of a projected 2% surplus kicker for a corporate kicker, and that's in the fund now. But there was a lot of discussion about the rate at which that fund fills up from the task force's work, concern over the ending balance, which is the ongoing revenue commitment is up to 1% of the general fund budget goes into the fund if it's available in the ending balance after the biennium has ended. So right now, of course, we're projecting a negative ending balance, so we're not projecting anything going in the fund from that source. But you'll see some recommendations in that area, and we have a number of proposals to look at ways to strengthen the reserve fund. And, of course, one of the messages we're getting very clearly over this in this current decade is that revenue volatility appears to be increasing, and the business cycle in this case seems to have been shortened to a more historical five-year period rather than the 10-year period we were in for a couple of decades.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have agreement to start this reserve fund
in
bill
the Senate.
In this
Correct.
Chamber?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Yes, in fact, I have the green sheet in my office.
Good.
These, in fact, Senator Morris, these are the bills, until you get down to House measures, these are the ones that the chair has talked about as starting in the Senate side.
Thank you.
Now, so there's some overlap in terms of bills in these particular areas, but these were the areas of focus. Those of you on the committee in February recall that there was a bill that originated from the Senate committee, Senate Bill 1082, and which directed Department of Revenue to prepare a report on personal income tax compliance. That report will be done, and that's one also we were hoping to get a joint meeting with the House on January 30th for Director Harchenko to go through that report, his recommendations on what kinds of things can be done to improve tax compliance, give us an estimate of what the magnitude of noncompliance is, what are the behavioral issues that may play into that. It builds on a lot of the work that Internal Revenue Service has done and trying to estimate that the amount of noncompliance. The focus is on the personal income tax, but we see this as a starting point to really look at and measuring what degree of compliance we have, and of course recommendations we would anticipate from the department on how we might over the long term improve that compliance and what types of suggested statutory changes might help. We also have issues around corporate income tax and, of course, tobacco taxes, particularly other tobacco products that have been issues for a while. The tax expenditure policy, the chair mentioned, discussed that, you know, this goes back to 1995, again, out of the Revenue Committee's developed, actually even going prior to that, in 93, the Revenue Committee's directed Legislative Revenue Office to create a prototype tax expenditure report, which they did, and then put it in statute for 1995 and directed the Department of Revenue to prepare the tax expenditure report every 2 years and release it the same time the governor's budget comes out. So we have a new report on that. We can get you those at a discounted rate. So if anybody is interested. In fact, we'll bring those to the committee so to make sure you have them. That's the tax expenditure. I think there's been a lot of discussion since that report came out, been used extensively as a resource, but how can it be more effectively structured to guide policy? And one of the elements that we have seen in that report is that it asked, is this tax expenditure meeting its policy purpose? Well, you know, you ask state agencies to do that, and that's not their role, is to determine policy. That's the role of the legislature. So this is one of the things we're trying to do with those impact statements we talked about and making sure that there is a clear policy direction from the legislature on what you expect these tax expenditures to do. We also have some proposals, institutional proposals, that will look at ways to try to give better direction to Department of Revenue and you know, what your goals are. The next set of issues there is the low-income tax relief and economic stimulus. There has been a lot of interest in this issue, the earned income tax credit in particular. Senator Rosenbaum spent a lot of time working on that. It actually originated from Senate Revenue Committee in 97, and that policy has evolved and become a refundable credit. There's a lot of interest in that, as well as some other low-income relief policies. For example, the Affordable Lenders Credit was expanded by the committee in February. And then you're going to see a lot of proposals for economic stimulus. What can the state do to try to stimulate the economy, given that we see unemployment very possibly going to 10% in the state? What kinds of things can be done to try to alleviate that? Of course, your biggest limitation is that you can't run deficits and you can't print money. So those are definitely hinder you in trying to stimulate the economy. So you're under constraints, but still, my recommendation is to look to the long term and look to policies and how they might affect the long term position of the state. And I think you can. There's a lot of things that you can look at that may be worth considering. So the next kind of issue, group of bills, would be around local government revenue diversification. We just requested three bills in this area as possible committee bills at the recommendation, at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties. The local governments, and very clearly came out from the task force report you'll see tomorrow, very clearly have been constrained by Measure 50, and some local governments more than others, but some are at very severe concerns financially from the timber payment phase out that's now scheduled for a four-year period. So the local fiscal structure is changing. There's a lot of pressure there, and the local governments, both counties and cities, are looking for ways to try to manage that and look for the state to give them some tools to do that, and you'll see a number of proposals in that area.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morris.
We, in our revenue restructuring task force, we did not make our last meeting at Tigard, and there was a concept that would have been presented and was subsequently sent by mail from a fellow that looked at changing Measure 5, the property tax, and creating an economic stimulus by making those adjustments. And I would like to have at least a review, maybe an invitation for a presentation and a review of his recommendations.
Yes, I read that as well, and I think probably the best thing to do is I think we'll have a bill here that he would be right on point with, and so make sure that Paul makes sure that he's there to testify and to bring his testimony that he submitted to the Revenue Restructuring Task Force.
I will do that. Make a note of that.
Thank you for reminding us on that, by the way.
Of course, the other process or institutional constraint is the Measure 50 is all constitutional, and that's so changes there have become constitutional amendments, and that's been a and you'll probably see some of those, but that's it's been very difficult to deal with that on the margin because of the constitutionality. The next set of issues I have are ones that we would anticipate or we know the House Revenue Committee is going to work on. We're never certain exactly what will come over, but there'll be a good deal of time spent in these areas. Federal income tax policy we know is going to undergo some major proposals. We're not certain what the stimulus package will look like. A lot of discussion around aid to state governments, Medicaid assistance, for example, changing the match rate, those kind of things, which could be a huge factor for balancing the budget. But we also anticipate some tax changes. And those tax changes, depending on how they're structured, can either be pluses or minuses for our revenue. Our system is built around the Rolling Reconnect policy, in which the legislature has decided to connect to changes in the federal tax base automatically. And that means that you have to act to disconnect to those changes. So you'll be seeing what those are, considering things that maybe you don't want to connect to that current law would automatically connect to, or things that you may want to connect to that that aren't necessarily part of the Rolling Reconnect. So you'll see both sides of that. For example, if the federal government enacts, looks like there'll be some type of a child tax credit, per child tax credit. Well, those kind of changes are not tax-based issues. So if the federal government increases the per child tax credit, that's less federal tax liability, reduces the federal subtraction on your Oregon return, and actually increases Oregon revenue. So that is a positive effect. There's a number of others like that. If, however, it's something that affects the base, for example, we think that the package will have an increase in the amount of expensing that small businesses can deduct for capital expenditures. That's a Rolling Reconnect issue. We would connect to that automatically unless you act, and that reduces revenue. So we'll try to, Chris Hallenack will be scoring that for you and try to give you a sense of the pluses and minuses and lay out those policy decisions for you as that's evolving. One positive thing we think is that that should come fairly soon in the new administration, so we'll at least have some time for you to look at those changes and react to them. The House has been very interested in corporate minimum tax reform, spent a lot of time last session. Actually, the corporate minimum tax discussion goes back to 2003, so we would anticipate the possibility of something. The governor made a proposal on corporate minimum tax, and we know House revenue spent a lot of time on that issue, so that could be a very significant bill coming to you. Of course, the House has a different constitutional role than the Senate Committee on Revenue, because bills for raising revenue have to originate in the House. So if there are steps taken that raise revenue, that are general revenue-raising bills, they'll have to come to you from the House, and we would anticipate that possibility given the fiscal outlook. We also have a number of major proposals from the governor that will spend a lot of time in policy committees, healthcare, transportation, for example, but they also have key revenue elements like the provider taxes, for example, which is a major component of financing healthcare and has that federal match component to it. So that's the current provider tax will be sunsetting on October 1, so this is a huge issue for the legislature in terms of balancing the budget. The final issue that the House spent a lot of time on, and then this committee did as well, last session, is on energy and environmental tax policy. The business energy tax credit was expanded significantly last session, and this will give you a chance to review the results of that, look at some of those outcome measures, and see if we can determine if those credits have had the effect that was anticipated. The last thing I have on the work plan is just a rough timeline for you, and that timeline dates are still tentative, depending on approval of the SCR that's being worked on, but the dates are to keep in mind. First of all, for bill draft requests is Groundhog's Day. We put that on your calendar for requests to council. So if there are things that that you're working on, something that you want to, you're considering conceptually, I would also encourage you to talk to us if there are revenue elements you'd like to kind of bounce off of us. March 2nd is deadline for bill introduction, so committee bill introduction would have to meet that deadline. We also have dates for completing work in the Chamber of Origin, which is April 27th. That particular rule does not apply to Finance and Revenue Committee because of your budgetary impact through your revenue policy decisions. So this committee is exempt from that, although I would advise you to, where possible, to follow those guidelines just in order to get your business done.
Yeah, before you move off at that point, we have very strict deadlines in the Senate. Our president takes them very seriously. And even though Senate Finance and Revenue is exempt from the regular committee deadlines, it's my intention as chair to fully comply with these deadlines in any area that we have control over. We don't have any control over subsequent referrals and things that come out of leadership at the last minute and that type of thing. But any of the bills for committee members or our colleagues, I intend to comply with these deadlines to the letter.
Mm-hmm. We did find in the last session that was certainly the case, that we got a number of bills from other committees right at the deadline. Mm-hmm. So in order for the committee to do its work, it needed to go a little beyond. But we also have a lot of bills that are in the committee throughout the couple months. The other dates that I'll draw your attention to, of course, the May 15 is always the major milestone in this building where the forecast is released. There will be another forecast on February 20th, which will be the March update. And then the May 15th, there are the numbers that we work with for your close of session budget. The way our process works here, and unlike a lot of states where you see kind of a mismatch of Some estimates are done by Department of Revenue, for example, and states. Executive branch will do the revenue impact estimates. Legislative branch will do the forecast. Or in many cases, they'll both do them. So you have this kind of dueling set of numbers. What we've done in Oregon for the last 30 years, at least, is to have the executive branch prepare the current law revenue forecast, and of course that's what you'll receive from the state economist, and then have the legislative branch through legislative revenue office prepare the revenue impacts. So the close of session estimate becomes the May 15th current law forecast plus or minus the revenue decisions that you make as a legislature. And that becomes the close of session. Of course, that becomes the base for the 2% surplus kicker calculation, and that's what you have to balance to at the end of session. So that's all I have on the work plan.
Any questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, I just really love the fact that we have now learned that the deadline for requesting bills is Groundhog Day, because since it's one of my favorite movies, it just seems like that we'll be living that day over and over and over. I don't think Legislative Council would be very amused by that.
Well, we'll hope to avoid that. Senator Happ?
Thanks, Paul. The 2009 federal tax cuts are supposed to go away. How do you see that playing out in a way that would affect us?
Senator Hast, that's a very good question. There's a number of things that come into play. There were the rate reductions that were approved in 2001 that will be sunsetted under current law, and so that means that tax rates will go back up. That will have some negative effect if that comes into play, because that would be more federal taxes to subtract for those that are below the cap. We don't think that's going to happen, at least not, certainly not in its current law form. In other words, we don't think it's just going to sunset. So there may be some modification of rates. The president-elect has talked some about a higher marginal bracket for higher income people. That could come into play. Usually those changes don't directly affect us, rate changes at the high end, because everybody's above the subtraction cap. So, but the other issue that always sneaks in is the alternative minimum, and that's been a one-year patch. We expect that to continue, but, you know, if you strictly look at current law, that's supposed to go away each year, and we may see some modifications to that. We're, you know, right now, we're very uncertain as to what will play out. We don't think there's going to be just a straight sunset, though. You think it'll be some modification?
The 2009 tax year. So, would we?
The sunsets for the rates are, I believe, 2010. So we would expect some change to take place in this year. Some commitment on the part of Congress and the President, how they want to deal with that sunset.
Paul, can you say a little bit more about the alternative minimum tax patch? They basically have patched it so that it doesn't reach into as low an income category. So if they continue with the patch, it should have no effect. Is that correct?
Senator, the patch that they've had, if you go back to current law, it's like the indexing that the state has for its brackets and personal exemption credit. It would go back to the original level unless it's extended a year.
Right.
So what happens is you lose all that period of inflation. So the value of the exemption calculation on the alternative minimum would go way down. And so people that are in the alternative minimum would have a big increase in the amount of tax they pay, and you'd have a lot of folks that would be pushed into the alternative minimum. There's not a lot of direct effect on us, again, for the same reason that the folks in that category tend to be above the federal tax subtraction. It does, however, the alternative minimum does significantly affect Oregonians as taxpayers, because the first thing that's pulled off of your Schedule A is state income taxes or state and local taxes. So being a heavy income tax, property tax state, which are deductible taxes, those go away immediately. So it does, in effect, increase the effective tax rate, federal and state, for a lot of Oregonians if they fall into that alternative minimum, because they lose that federal deduction on state taxes. So it is a significant factor for your constituents. And it's something that I'm sure Senator Telfer can comment on this. I mean, it's something that has gotten to be unusual in its effects. We have, you have a group of people as their income rises that fall into it, but then if your income keeps rising, then you go above it. You're back under the regular rates again. So it's kind of has some odd effects. So we'll see what kind of changes might take place. The problem for Congress is there's a lot of revenue there. If they were just to eliminate it, they would lose a lot of revenue, and now, of course, they're looking at very large deficits. Mm-hmm. The other issue I might add, too, that's a Reconnect-related issue, even though not directly for us, is the estate tax, where we've seen where we have a very strange federal law in which it goes away and then comes back to its pre-2001 form. We've heard some things from the new administration that they may be looking at modification to that, either freezing it at its level it is now or making some modifications to it. And that may be something, too, that the committee will want to look at. One thing I will point out, we have continue to be surprised at the growth of revenue in our state tax now. It's up, I think it's $198 million is the projection for this biennium. That's all general fund revenue. So it is a significant revenue source.
The estate tax.
The estate tax, yes. The state portion of it. So those are all kind of issues that are tied to federal policy, and we'll have to see how those play out.
Okay. So
if I could just say one more thing, Madam Chair, we'll be posting for the committee meeting next week, committee meetings, and you will be meeting on the 19th, right? So we do have a meeting plan for then. What we'll do is go through some orientation on the personal income tax, the 2% surplus kicker, everybody's favorite topic, and reserve funds, which is a major issue now in the current fiscal environment. Our meeting for Tuesday has been canceled because of a training for the Senate. And then we'll have some more orientation on Wednesday, the 21st, property taxes and lottery. And then Thursday, I mentioned earlier, the Revenue Restructuring Task Force report. The chair of the task force will be here to talk with you. So we'll post that after the meeting today.
And I also wanted to alert the committee that on Monday, during our regular committee time, we will have a tour of the Oregon State Lottery. Mm-hmm. So bring your coins. And do they have video
Madam Chair, that's
there?
The 26th.
26th. Oh,
right. So not that's coming Monday, but next Monday.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's what I meant. Mm. Thank you for correcting me. And
they're probably closed on next Monday, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Everyone is closed except us in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, Paul, are we going to have transportation out there? How are we going to get out there? Just individually?
Madam Chair, I think individually. We'll give you a map to get out there. It's, about a five-minute drive.
Okay, great. And I have a car that
right
holds
out,
four.
Right on State Street.
Okay, this should be an interesting tour. I'm not doing it. It's on Monday the 26th.
It's on the way to prison.
It's on the way to prison.
That's very appropriate. Okay, any other anything else to add, Paul? Okay, any other questions from the committee or anything to add? Okay, thank you. Looking forward to it, and we are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.